We had tornadoes. Not like they were in our area. I didn't see any. We were all safe and good. Did you guys have any damage from the high winds?
Thankfully, no.
Yeah, the neighbors did right next door. Mm. They had wind damage last year, and they cut this tree partway down so it wouldn't happen again. And then another branch from this tree landed on top of their electrical wires and ruined part of their roof. We just have branches and stuff in our yards. No damage. Some mental damage.
No.
We lost power Friday morning and got it back Monday morning.
That's a long time.
It was a very long time. It was so we have the other house that we were turning it into a rental, and normally we would just go over there and stay. But we were over there on Thursday and Friday. So the first night of not having power, we were over there because we were getting ready for our very first renter, which was coming Saturday. This is a big deal for us because we've been at this for a couple of years now. But there was so much to do. And so we came back on Saturday morning, and the email from the electric company said, it'll be on 11 p.m. tonight. I'm like, all right. And then later that evening, we get another email saying, it'll be on 11 p.m. tomorrow night. And it was cold. And so we found a Red Roof Inn that allowed dogs. So we packed up the dogs and stayed in a nasty Red Roof Inn. We came back the next day, and it said, power will be on Sunday at 11. And I'm like, okay, we'll just tough it out. And then later that evening, it said power will be on Monday at 11. They kept pushing it back every single day. Monday night was the really cold night. So we were like, what are we going to do? We can't keep going to the hotel. But on Sunday night, my old sponsorship paid off. I had one of those EcoFlows.
Yeah.
And I didn't have it at the beginning of the power outage because I let somebody else borrow it.
The power bank, right?
What's that? Yeah, big old power. It's like a 60-pound battery. And it's got actual like 2 and 3 prong plugs in there. And I didn't have it at the beginning of the electrical outage because I let somebody borrow it. When I got it back, I didn't charge it. And so when we went to Red Roof Inn, I charged it there. And then on Sunday, this is not a sponsorship, but on Sunday, we were able to watch the F1 race. We had our Wi-Fi router hooked up to it. We had lights on it. And then we had all these things plugged into it. And the next day, it was still at 65%. Like that thing absolutely amazing. It was the hero of the weekend. But anyway, I was supposed to work on some video stuff over the weekend. I was supposed to release the router sled video, but I couldn't. And now I'm using it as an excuse to not finish it up. Like it's just, I got a couple more edits to do for the very end. I've got all the, it just needs like 10 more minutes of work. Plus I know what I need to do for the thumbnail. I just haven't made the thumbnail yet. And I'm already on to the next thing, so I'm over that project. But yeah, it's been quite the weekend. And then after our first runner left, we got our second runner right away. And they're there right now.
Awesome.
So this is a pretty big deal for us. This is we were talking, briefly joking about exit plans out of YouTube, and maybe this is our exit plan. But it's finally we're not getting enough renters to pay them that mortgage yet, but we're on our way.
You just started.
Feels good.
Yeah. Do you think, I mean, obviously you're new to the renter thing, so you may not be able to answer this, but do you think you could see yourself having multiple properties? You know, is that the plan, is to end up getting another one?
Okay. Yeah. It will take a while to get there because right now we're in debt, and I don't think the bank would allow for another property. And
just go to a different bank. I'm just kidding.
The whole business thing has been hard to deal with. When we bought the, I sound so privileged. I get that. But when we bought the house in Toledo that we're going to turn into a rental, we just bought it in our personal names and then just transferred it to a business that Kelly and I started. No big deal. We thought we would do the same thing with this Michigan house. And then it turns out this particular lender doesn't allow that transfer.
Oh.
And so we're dealing with like Michigan and Ohio tax things and trying to figure out how to navigate that. But things are on the right path. And we hope to someday have more properties, but it's going to take a little bit to get there.
Yeah.
We keep saying it's tough to be a mogul.
They don't make it easy when it comes to taxes and forms, and it's not easy. It's not for everybody.
Going over state lines. So like the whole thing is, you know, our business is in Ohio, and if you have a property in Michigan, you're a foreigner there, and it greatly increases all the paperwork to do that. So the best option is the easier option, but the easier option is to start a Michigan business. So we're kind of looking into that and having multiple businesses. And
I can't imagine when I'm looking for property in and around this area, because I'm always looking to find like the perfect opportunity. I don't even consider certain towns because I know they're planning board meetings you got to go to.
Oh,
like, yeah. I don't even bother. I'm like, oh, that's in that address. I'm not even going to think about it. But there's certain towns I know that are easy, like East Durham, which doesn't have zoning. I'm like, okay, I could do anything I want here. But that town, even though it's a great deal, I'm just going to stay away from it. Because you can get stuck in a project that doesn't get done because somebody on the board doesn't like me or doesn't like the idea.
And getting in the short-term rental game is tricky depending on where you live too. In Toledo, you just pay a yearly fee of $100, something like that. And there is no fee in this town in Michigan, but the town, it's kind of like a touristy town, and they might be introduced. There, certain people want to limit the amount of short-term rentals there.
Yeah, in Woodstock, it's very complicated because everybody wants to go there for the weekend.
Yeah, and so we wanted all this to get done so we would get grandfathered into that amount, that number that they would allow. So, it's been a learning process. Kelly has just gone all in on researching and best practices and all that.
That's really cool. Yeah. It's something I've thought about doing, but I don't know. One of the things in our area that made me interested in doing, not necessarily short term, which I would still like to do, but just rental property, is we had this battery plant. This Ford battery plant was being built near here in our county and not in the town. And it's been the last several years, there's been all this economic growth and like tons of housing being built and all this, you know, it's just all the stuff because it was going to bring in 5,000 jobs and all the stuff. So they built these two gigantic buildings. I mean, just like a mile long buildings. And I'm not exaggerating, they're a mile long each. And so they built these two things. And then all of a sudden, this company that was a Ford and South Korea battery thing dissolved and they pulled out. And so now it's just not happening. It's just gone. Wow.
So now it's going to become a detention center.
I don't know what it's going to become. I mean, well, one of them, Ford is still, I guess, owns the building and they're going to make home batteries for some other company or something eventually, but it's not happening now, which means now all of these apartments and these like rental homes that had been built to house the incoming flux of people are now sitting empty. So if I had bought a rental home in the last couple of years, like
you'd
a lot of people
stuck
did,
a little bit.
Yeah. There's a lot of people that I know that bought homes and have several properties and stuff that are now just like, what do I do with this?
You know, did your town do the whole, like, we're getting all these new people, we got to redo our sewer system? Did they redo all that?
I mean, parts of it. It's, our town is always in progress of something. I think it's a good thing. I don't hear that as a negative thing, but I think they are constantly upgrading this and changing that and redoing these roadways to, you know, to like let the whole thing kind of grow in a good way. But yeah, I think they put a bunch of infrastructure. I know they did into the roads that now is not really necessary, but it's better, you know. I mean, the roads are better. That's cool. But anyway, because of all that stuff, I'm glad that I didn't follow the initial idea to, like, you know, I looked at a couple houses and kind of loosely, not real. Yeah. And I'm glad I didn't follow through on that.
They've said for, you know, at least 100 years, like, real estate is like the, basically the surefire investment, because property values always go up. But in this particular case, maybe not so.
Well, yeah. I think that's the truth. It's still the truth long term. But this little bump in the, you know, we thought it was going to grow and then it didn't. That's the short term kind of thing. And from what I hear, real estate is the thing you got to be willing to sit on for it to really pay off, typically. Yeah. You know? But I don't know. I still am thinking about, I still definitely want to build the A-frame. And in my mind, it has become more and more a combination of, like, short-term rental and a retreat kind of place for us and for family. It was really weird. Let me make you cry for just a second. The other day, I was out at the farm and I was working on some stuff. Beautiful day. And I was out there just, like, walking around in the woods, and stuff's just barely starting to pop, like, greens showing up everywhere. And I was thinking about, like, yeah, I could build a deck right here off next to the barn that goes out, and, like, you know, the ground drops away. It'd be really cool to come out here and have, like, lunch and just hang out. And then the A-frame could go over there. And then I don't want to do that. You know, I had all these ideas, all this stuff that I want to do. And then I had this, like, daydream thing of my kids growing up and moving away and then coming back to visit and dropping their kids off with me at my house and then coming to stay in the A-frame. And I was like, ah! I started crying. Just out in the woods by myself going, like, no, but yes, you know, like, it sounds awesome, but it also sounds terrible to, like, have my kids grow up and move away, which I know is probably inevitable, but it got me thinking more and more about, like, you know, I want to do that, start to build that out sooner than later, so that by the time my life gets to that point, which is not really that far away, honestly, some of that infrastructure, that, like, retreat kind of place is there. And then when we're gone, the kids have that to split, and their kids have it to split, you know? So
it's such a beautiful reason to want to do that. We've learned that, if you want to claim, I don't know how to word this properly, because this is all outside of my knowledge base, but if you want to be able to what's it called when you buy stuff for the business and write-offs, if you want to claim full write-offs for a property, you can only stay there 14 days a year. Otherwise, you can't claim the full write-offs of that stuff, because you're also using it for personal use. And so,
I see what you mean.
Yeah. So when we go there, we have to document, like, we were there for work reasons. We had to paint this or move the couch or whatever.
So as long as I leave the A-frame and walk over and, like, hit the Carmagee with a hammer, I can be like, yes, I did work, and then
I did work. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. Is the laws around that are written in a very vague way. So it's really hard to get, like, concrete information. And I think a lot of it is about intent.
Yeah. But if I hit it with a hammer, I'm just kidding.
Right.
That reminds me of a story. And Did I ever tell you guys I went on a date with, this is 25 years ago. It was right after, Martha Stewart got out of jail, however long ago that was, because it was Martha. I can't even remember her name.
You went
Martha
on a date
Stewart,
with Martha Stewart?
Please, her daughter. I went on a date with Martha Stewart's daughter.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
And, there was no chemistry. We were set up by friends, but we had a nice time together. She was cool. She was very funny. And, really sarcastic New Yorker. But she told me that she was talking about her mother a little bit, and she said they scrutinized her Easy Pass. So if you claim this residence or that residence as your permanent home, I don't know the details of why she got in trouble, but I know she got in trouble through some tax stuff. But basically saying when the government decides to figure out what and if you're lying about anything, they'll figure it out. And she said they scrutinized her easy pass to see how many times her car was this place or that place.
Oh, wow.
So
that was the one thing that I took away. And then we shook hands and that was the end of it. Never talked to her
Goodbye.
Again. And it was funny because every...
And I turns told, out you have a 24-year-old child.
No. That's the next thing I was going to bring up. Apparently, and I didn't know this because she was at some she had
Jimmy
a serious
Stewart.
Radio show. She had a serious,
oh my gosh.
What, Bob?
I said the kid's name is Jimmy Stewart.
No,
go ahead.
That's funny. She had a Sirius XM radio show at the time, and I never listened to it. It was funny. The friend who's going to set us up said, oh, do you want to go? I was like, all right. He goes, check, listen to a show. Maybe you don't even like her. So I listened to the show for a couple of days. I was like, all right, why not? I'll do it for the story at the very least. Maybe we'll make friends. And, after the date, a couple of people were like, so are you going to be the father of a baby? And I didn't know this, but at the time she was talking a lot about like looking for a father to a baby she hasn't had yet. So
that's
she was like searching for a father. Oh, more than a boyfriend or a husband, apparently.
Oh, okay.
That's fun.
And I didn't even know about it when we went out and didn't come up. I guess I wasn't a good candidate.
Well, her loss.
Yes, that's right. Her loss.
Because look at you now.
She could be going out with an aging YouTube star.
Oh, we need to start
star
a club.
Quotes.
Yeah. I don't know if I've told you guys this before or not, and it's not really that great of a story, but I'm going to tell it anyway. So we found out a while back that somewhere in my family line is, I can't think of her name. Emily Post. You ever heard of Emily Post?
Yeah, I heard that name.
She wrote a book, I think, on like manners, and for a long time, her whatever was the standard for like, this is how you lay out the plates and this is how you have manners when you meet people. And this, and it was like very,
I remember
like,
that. Yeah.
You know, so apparently she was in my family, which is really funny because my family is not that way at all. We're just like real chill and easy. And then, apparently Martha Stewart, her maiden name, I think might be wrong about this. Her maiden name is Ruskowski, which is Jenny's maiden name because Jenny is related to Martha Stewart back, you know, at some point. And she's all about like decor and manners and all this stuff. And it's really funny when you think about those two people being in the line and then you go up and you look at our house and you're like, no, I don't think that worked out. It didn't pass
down.
You can
get free copies of their books.
Yeah. Well, they would be in the stacks with everything else in our house. But yeah, I always thought that was kind of just ironic that those two people were in our families at some point. What have you guys been working on, Jimmy?
Have you guys been seeing these cast iron shelf brackets that I've been making on the CNC machine?
I saw the picture that you sent to us.
Yeah, I sent you guys pictures. I posted a little bit about it. Me and Rob cleaned out the horse barn. There's the four stall section of the horse barn where the horses would be, but there's no horses, of course. And I want
a horse, of course,
there's no horses. Now that I'm getting into pottery, I want to start consolidating all the various pottery stuff I have into one of those sections. And so Rob and I cleaned up this weekend and I needed shelves. So I looked at the walls. I was like, I don't want to put metal racking on these beautiful wooden walls. So I started looking and I was like, if this is going to appear to be an old vintage barn, let me make some vintage shelf brackets. And so I found one online and I hand drew it. I found an antique one on eBay and I just looked at the picture and I hand drew it in Procreate. And then I took that image, turned that image into vectors, and then cut it out on the CNC machine. And I made about 25 of them. And so I'm making this wall of shelves. And I'll probably end up making a lot more of the brackets to use them in and around the horse barn, wherever I need other shelves. So that's what I've been working on. And I'm going away right after the podcast today. I'm going to the Papa Chad's hangout in Alabama. So Rob and I are going to leave here and then hop in my truck and we're going to drive. We're going to do a couple of rendezvous. We're going to first go to Baltimore to go to Chris Hatch's place. Chris is on our Patreon list. Thank you, Chris McCormick. We're going to meet up with Chris. And then from there, we're going to go down to Atlanta. And I think the plan is to go talk in Char's school. Me and Derek are going to go talk to Char's class and Woodmaven Char. And then we're going to head over to Papa Chad's by Friday afternoon. We should be there. So it's going to be a couple of days of driving. It should be fun. I'm always up for a road trip. But nice. A funny thing happened last night.
That's something I've never said. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, same. I don't like being in a car.
So I went and got my oil changed the other day. And then last night, when you leave my driveway, it's on a little bit of a hill. And so when I stop, my car automatically puts the electronic brake on, which is unnecessary, but it always does. It automatically puts because my car is technologically advanced, my truck. I'm sure it's going to catch up to me. So last night, this happened to me. I put the car in park to go check my mailbox. The car's on a slope, automatically puts on the electronic brake. And then I get back in the car and put it in drive. And the brake releases when you step on the gas. So you hear a big snap. And then I got a warning light on my dashboard that said, brake, 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 put the car in park, put the car in park, with a brake logo with a wrench under it. I was like, and then a Ooh. Warning sign that says, service your electronic brake. And I drove to the store with it the whole time. And then I got to the parking lot and I threw the car in park and tried to get rid of it. And it wouldn't go away. So then I asked ChatGPT and it's like, oh yeah, the problem with that could be that it doesn't turn your dashboard lights off because the car thinks it's not in park. If you're getting like these new modern cars, if you don't put the car in park, nothing shuts off digitally. It's like, you kind of got to put the car in park to shut me down. It's kind of what the car is saying to you. So I got out of my car at the grocery store and the dashboard light stayed on for like 10 full minutes. And then I'm asking ChatGPT, it's like, yeah, it's the shifter button that typically breaks in the new Chevys. So it thinks the car's not in park. And this is consequences. You know, ChatGPT always gives you like consequences or final conclusions. Yeah, your battery's going to die. I'm like, oh, great. That's all I need is that my car doesn't shut down because it thinks it's not in park. So I'm anticipating that becoming a bigger problem. So I got out of the grocery store, got in the car. I put the brake on, shut it off, put the brake on, shut it off, jam, jiggle, 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 jiggle the shifter knob. And then eventually the warning went away and it hasn't come back. So I'm just nervous. This happened last night. So now I'm going to get in my car and drive a couple thousand miles. So I threw the battery jumper pack in my truck. So maybe I'll be okay. Just in case.
You'll be fine.
Yeah.
What could go wrong?
What could go wrong?
The only reason I say that publicly is just because I'm a little nervous, but I also want to see if anybody out there had that problem. Message me and tell me if it's the beginning of a bigger problem.
You're leaving.
Obviously, I'll just take it to Chevy when I have time.
You're leaving as soon as we finish recording, but the show won't be out until you are well on your way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So. By then, I will have gotten the whole column shifter replaced in my truck by the time the show's out on the side of the road in North Carolina.
No. One of the things that I like my Honda Ridgeline. I'm actually on my third one. I don't have many complaints about it, except for the gear shifter is buttons. And so you could easily put it in neutral, reverse, or drive if you're not looking at it. Like, I miss the old, like, mechanical, physical thing that you would move and you know that you're in drive or reverse. And also, wiener dogs will step on the buttons if they're roaming around the car, which you shouldn't do, by the way.
I never even thought about that. Dogs in a car with like push button stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I always had to worry about the Yorkie stepping on the locks of the door. If I leave the Yorkies in the car for a minute and then I turn around and come back and now the car is locked with my keys in it.
Oh, I've been there when Weens was around. I went into the convenience store to go get a soda and I came out and he was locked in the car and I got him to step on the button and a few minutes later and unlocked it. And then it happened again. Later that year, there's tornado sirens going off, but they're just statewide testings. So if you hear that, it's nothing to be alarmed about. Right. And then a few months later in the wintertime, I went into the gas station, didn't learn my lesson. Ween stepped on the lock button and I had the car running and I couldn't get in. and I couldn't get him to step on the unlock button. And the heat was on. It was probably 90 degrees in this car. It's 30 degrees outside. And I had to call a tow company to come and break into my car and get it open. Oh. And meanwhile, Weens was just like, how come you won't come in? Why are you looking at me? It was awesome. Actually, I got a ride to my home where I got the spare key fob, went back to the car, and it turns out you can't use your spare key fob.
Well, yeah, when the car's running.
Yes. Doesn't do anything. Yeah. Good lesson learned.
Yeah. Wow. And the other day it was like 5 degrees out and I tried to start my car. I always start my car from inside the house. And I was actually in the bathroom. I just got out of the shower. I'm like, I'm going to start my car from my phone. So I started from the phone and it won't start. It says, won't work. Won't work. I'm like, uh-oh, now I'm going to go out to my car with a dead battery. And I didn't know why. And after all was said and done, I got dressed. I went out to the car. It's because the key fob was inside the car. Oh, it won't start remotely with the key fob sitting on the dashboard.
So we ran into a weird thing with our Suburban in regards to the key fob. So where we park next to the house, and the driveway obviously is next to the house, and Jenny would always bring her keys in upstairs. So we park next to the basement, and then she would be upstairs. The kitchen is right there. And so she would always leave her keys and her purse and stuff on the counter of the kitchen. And it's relatively close to the car. And the car kept dying. Like, we would come out some mornings and the battery was just dead and we never could figure out what was causing it. And it turned out that if the remotes are, and I don't know if this is all remotes, but this, with our car, if the remote was within a certain distance, all night long, the car is pinging the remote to see if it can get a signal. And if it gets it, it tries to hold the signal. But it was just out of range, so it would hold it and then it would lose it and then it would try to find it again. And so it was running the battery down overnight just because it was a few feet closer than it needed to be. And so the same thing will happen, I think, if you leave your keys in your car. And this doesn't happen over in one night. It happened like over time. It just rocked the battery down a little bit. And if you don't drive a lot in between, then it never has time to charge back up and stuff like that. And so they ended up telling us to, you know, never leave your keys in your car for that reason. Make sure that when you take them in the house, they're more than, I don't remember.
That's interesting. I didn't know that. 25
feet away or something like that.
Hmm.
So
you might want to
be careful there. But,
well, so I changed the subject, but I was just saying I'm getting my pottery studio together, and that's why I made those shelf brackets. And I'm excited to get my pottery studio together. My last video, I haven't even looked. I just posted it and never looked back because I know a video about pottery probably gets negative views. So I never even looked. I don't even know how many views that last video got. Last I looked, it was about 20,000, but that was the day I posted it. So I don't know where it's at now. But I'm getting into pottery. I don't know if it's a big fan attraction, but I really am having fun with it. Good. And so it's nice to be able to set up the studio to bring this conversation back to making. I'm setting up my studio, and like I said, I'm collecting all the various bits and pieces I've purchased over the years and impulse buys off of Amazon that just get stuck on a shelf. So it's nice to have everything in one corner. And that's, I think I sent you guys a picture of the corner. I'll send you one with the shelves up last night. So, and that's going to be a video because I have enough content to put together at least a 10-minute video on making these shelf brackets and how they work. So I'm excited about that. I worked there late last night to get all the shelves up, and I'm like, now I want to make something, but I got to go to Alabama. So when I get back, I'm going to delve into making some pottery stuff. I still haven't gotten a pottery wheel, which I'll get one soon.
Is there a reason you haven't gotten one? That seems unlike you because, you know, it seems like you've been like interested in pottery for so long. And usually when you find a new thing, you're like, hey, I'm going to go buy 300 bandsaws. I'm going to just keep buying bandsaws. Or I'm going to buy, hey, look, trucks. I need more trucks.
I keep looking on Facebook Market for one. And there's lots of them, but they're always like a 100-mile drive. So I could also just order one from Bailey's. Yeah. Bailey's Pottery Supply is in Kingston, which is really close to me. So I might just pick one up. And because I keep following so many potters, because they keep getting suggested. So I'm like, oh, I want to see this guy again. I want to follow him. And now I'm getting pop-up ads. All I have to do is hit purchase and one will show up in a week, but I will eventually. My resistance is wearing fast. Well, I also want to make one, but I don't want to take the time to make one before I get a chance to use one again. So I'll probably buy one and then make one.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
We'll see. What have I been doing lately? Okay. So I was going to start working on the Ghia. I think I said that last week. And I'm still planning to, but I haven't yet. Okay. I just want to throw that out there. I'm not doing it. I just haven't done it yet. I started thinking about how I wanted to use this last week and ended up switching gears. I got a comment on one of the pool house videos. I put up, when I was putting up the tongue and groove ceiling, I ran a piece of Romex. I put a box up there for a light to put up eventually. And then I ran a piece of Romex down through the framing over to one of the posts that comes down. And then I put a piece of conduit there and just dropped it through the conduit. And it wasn't hooked up to anything. It was just like a placeholder so that there was a wire in place before I put the ceiling up. And one of the comments said, it's against code to run Romex through a conduit, which I was like, really? And so I looked it up and they were totally right. But it got me thinking that little comment and I was like, oh, I did not realize that that was a thing that you weren't supposed to do. And I wonder why. So I started looking into it and I didn't ever really get a great reason as to why.
Romex is a white or yellow covered wire, right?
Yeah. So it's like a sleeved 2 or 3 or 4 conductor wire. It's sleeved and it's for running, you know, through framing and stuff. But you're not supposed to put it through conduit. And so then I was like, well, what are you supposed to use in an outdoor wires. Conduit? Yeah, it's called THHN. I think there's 2 different types, but that's the one that I got. Anyway, so through getting that comment and realizing that I did something wrong, which was totally fixable at this point. I mean, the wire was run through the ceiling, but it was fixable. I was like, I've been avoiding doing electrical work on camera in a video because I'm not an electrician.
Even if you're an electrician, don't do it.
Well, so I decided.
Even if you're like a professional electrician, Patrick gets comments all the time.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. And I expect that. But I decided this was an opportunity for me to take something that even though I'm comfortable with doing myself, I've done a lot of electrical work, I don't know that I'm doing it correctly. And so the video, I ended up making a video about adding electrical. I already had the circuits run in the box, so like it's not like I'm doing things that I shouldn't be doing, but I just am extending the 2 circuits that were already added into the building and adding lights and receptacles. But I framed the video as, this comment made me realize that I didn't know something. So I'm going to start doing research and trying to understand the correct way to do this every step of the way and show you all that anybody can swap out lights and receptacles and switches and you can do this. It's not that hard. You just have to figure out the proper way to do it, right? And follow your codes. And I framed that in the video, like I'm not an electrician. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm going to show you how I'm trying to learn it along the way and like point out the stuff that I'm trying to figure out. So I absolutely will still get a bunch of comments about you're doing this wrong. You're doing that wrong. You didn't do this. You forgot to do this, but I asked for it. I said, tell me in the comments what I'm doing wrong because I'm not gluing any of the conduit together so I can change it. I'm not.
Yeah, that's a good way to diffuse the
hiding anything
dialogue.
So that I can fix it once I get your comments. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes and the response to that. I mean, generally, in the last couple of years, my comments have been very positive, like overwhelming positive. There's always jerks, but there's, you know, people are really helpful and uplifting and stuff. So I expect to get feedback that I did wrong stuff, but that's the point. So we'll see how that goes. But all that to say, over the last week or so, I extended these 2 circuits out. I added a light on. I had a light put on the front of the building that wasn't hooked up. And so I got a light on the inside of the building and on the front and underneath the covered side. It's got its own switch. I got 2 switches for the other thing. I got plugs run throughout the whole thing. So I have power. And it's so cool. I go out
you
there
send and photos and it looks amazing all lit up. Yeah.
It looks. Yeah. It feels way more finished. Just, you know, it's not a box anymore. It's like I can go in there at night, turn the lights on, and I don't know what I'm going to do out there, but I could do stuff out there if I wanted to.
It's nice when you do that. Do you find yourself just standing in there and just sitting there?
Yeah.
There's nothing to do, but you just keep going there. When I did parts of the graveyard house, it's the same thing. I just go and sit there.
Yeah.
Just keep envisioning and kind of ideating on what's next.
Yeah, that's what I was doing. Yeah, go ahead.
I remember my first shop at the other house. And I would get it set up and, you know, you make a mess and then you spend a day cleaning it up and you get it all organized and looking good. And I just remember, I'm still new to woodworking, but I would just stand on the basement stairs looking at it like, that is so cool. That is mine. How did I get here? You know? I find myself just standing and looking and admiring all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I went out there the other night after I got it all hooked up and turned on for the first time. And, you know, it was dark and I went inside and flipped on the lights for the first time to see it without ambient light from the outside, you know, just to see what, and I was like, whoa, it is like really bright in here. And then I just kind of stood there and looked around at all of it. Cause every time I've been inside that building and looked up at the framing and all the work that I've done, it's all been lit by the sun, right? Which is always coming in from different angles, which means it's not all lit up at the same time. And so standing in there and kind of like spinning around and like, wow, everything is like really well lit and I can see all of my bad nailing and you know, all of my stuff. But it was really, really cool to just, I don't know, to have it's a usable space, you know?
Yeah.
And like you said, Jimmy, now it was a matter of like thinking about, okay, what can I do with the inside of this? Like what do I want this to be? How, you know, what's the next step? Like, how is insulation going to look in here? And what do I want for the ceiling? And that stuff is all down the road. I've got way more stuff to do before I can even really start working on any of that. But it was really cool. And hopefully the comments on this one are positive enough to make it worth the the effort. But either way, I'm glad to have the work done.
Have any memories of the first time, like when you were a kid, the first time you went to your school at night? And I have like vivid memories of like, I didn't go to a lot of, you know, my elementary school didn't have sporting events. And so when you went to the school at night for whatever, it just had a different feel, look, vibe. And I just remember that vividly.
Interesting. I don't remember that. I could see that though. I mean, like lighting changes a lot. So yeah, I could see that being really different.
What's the safety concern of running Romex and conduit?
I think it has something to do with moisture buildup, but I'm not really sure what the bad thing about it is, but it very explicitly says that you're not supposed to do it. So that, I mean, the comment was right. And so you end up running, just individual wires, you know, that I don't know what the difference is about them versus they just don't have a sheathing on the outside of all of them as a single unit. I don't know if the wire is different. I don't know if the coverage on individual wires is different. I don't know. But I did, this was kind of funny. When I went to get the wire, I only needed 25 feet of this wire because I only am going through a little bit of conduit and then in a box, it switches back to Romex to go through the framing. So these 25 foot spools are about this big. I'm holding up a coffee cup. They're about that size, maybe a little bit bigger. And when you go to Lowe's to buy wire, at least where I live, all of the wire is in these big cages and they're all locked up. And you can't just walk up and like get a bundle of Romex or anything anymore because it's worth a lot of money and people steal it, I guess.
Yep.
And so I'm standing there looking on one side, the big case behind me has all the Romex rolls in it and they're huge, right? They're like this big thing. And so you have to get help for those. And then I turn around where this THHN stuff is and there's these little coffee cup sized rolls. And it turns out that the opening in the grid is slightly bigger than the roll. So you can reach through the fence and grab the roll you want and just pull it out.
Oh.
And so yeah, in case you're getting a small amount of
hot tip,
you know, wire, yeah, it's easy. You don't have to get help, you can just reach in there and get it. So I did that. That's not actually the next video coming up, but it is in the upcoming ones. I was telling you guys beforehand, I had a couple of really cool sponsorship opportunities, well-paying sponsorship opportunities that have come up, which is really amazing for this time of year. It's amazing in general, but it's amazing this time of year. But both of them they're not just sponsorship opportunities. They're like, here's a theme. We want you to do something within this theme. And so typically I don't like that type of thing because it's somebody else like pushing, like, here's an idea. Here, it's like somebody coming up and being like, hey, I got a great idea. You should make this. That's what it feels like. But they also want to give you money. So it's not terrible. But so with both of these, it was really easy for me to come up with an idea that fit their thing, but was also something that I would actually use. But the impetus for the idea was not mine. And so it felt a little bit weird to be like, well, if one of them is in the backyard and it's just something to make the backyard better. And I'm excited about it. But I wouldn't have had to think of it had I not been given this challenge to do. The other one is in the garage, which is a just disaster. I mean, it just, there's stuff stacked everywhere and it's, you can't even walk through it and everything. And that's one of those things that cleaning up the garage makes for a terrible video. So I wasn't going to make a video just about that, but making something to put in the garage gives me a reason to clean up the garage. And so both of these things are not things that I would have initiated, but then once I was forced to come up with a project to fit here and to fit here and to make this possible, then I started thinking about stuff that I actually, you know, would want there. And I came up with two ideas that I really like. And one of them, the one I'm going to start next week, is it's concrete casting. It's something I've never done. I don't know anything about. It probably will fail completely, which would not be great for the sponsorship.
It's fun and easy.
So, but I'm excited about that because I came up with this idea and then I overcomplicated it. And that made me excited. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. Yesterday I was stuck with, I can't do either one of these things yet because the materials and the tools that they're sending are not here yet. Right. So I was just in a planning phase. And so I just kind of walked in circles in my shop for a good hour, just thinking out loud. I have a big whiteboard there. And so I'd like draw something and be like, okay, well, what do I have to figure out before? Since I can't actually do anything yet, what can I figure out ahead of time? And so it was just planning and then research and then planning and then measuring. And I got to the end of the day and the plan is done. I started figuring out what I could go ahead and knock out to get ahead, to get ready to do it and everything. But I was just really excited. I don't know. I got to the end of the day and was just really like, this is going to be cool. And it felt a little bit weird to get to a point where this is going to be really cool. And the initial thrust of the idea was not from me.
I have a lot of experience in this. I think creativity is easier when you work within parameters, when you have something that you have to do. So you're already in a direction. So now your brain can focus on this one thing. This happens all the time where, you know, I'll discuss with Kelly, like, she's like, hey, I know you're busy, but we need a thing. We can buy it. If you're too busy, we'll buy it, but we need this thing. And this thing has to do this particular thing and would be even better if it did. And like, if you just throw me on a path, that is when I thrive. Like, yeah. I'm like, oh.
I love being blindsided with concepts. I tell people all the time, like, what do you want? Just tell me what you need and I'll solve that problem. And it really does help to have a framework to hang a concept on.
Well, it's funny because, David, I've heard you say that. You've said that a lot of times, that the constraints, you know, give you kind of direction and help you be more creative and stuff. And it's not that I don't believe you, but it's just like, I usually don't have that. And so it feels really foreign to me mm-hmm. to have. And it wasn't even like they said, you know, hey, you should build a whatever. It was just like, hey, do something in your backyard. It was that general. It wasn't, like, here's a couple of tools you should use. So
I think there's, it's one of the reasons I don't like working with tool companies, because the tool companies kind of want to say how they want the tools used, or they want to have a say in the project. But when you do this and you initially get that suggestion, there's this like, I don't own that idea. But then, so you're already on a low, but then when you come up with the idea to make it yours, and you take ownership of that, like it increases that excitement even more, because you're like, ah, I took that problem and I made it mine, and now I own this idea. So
that's a good point. Yeah, that may be why I got excited about it, because it went from like a general idea to my idea. Like I think that was the complication part. I kept complicating it. I kept adding things to it until I felt like, oh, okay, like I've done work here. I've made it more than bare minimum. I've made it, you know, I've made it harder on myself in the future. But yeah, so it was kind of weird to have that yesterday, but also. And it's also weird because I basically have 2.5 weeks before I leave for spring break with my family. And I have both of these videos have to be shot. One of them has to be edited before I leave. And I don't have the material and the tools from either one of the companies yet. So the next 2 weeks is going to be like very packed, you know, and then I'll go on vacation. Not crazy about that, because I've gotten used to a certain tempo that I work at, and you know, I like that pace and everything, but they're both cool ideas. So I don't know. We'll see how it turns out. But it was an interesting difference in brainstorming, because that's not typically how I brainstorm. It's like half figuring it out and half building it. And this was very, you know, I felt like somebody had just put me in a room with nothing and said, okay, you can't do anything except think, or you can't do anything except plan. And then I had to actually do that, which was nice. It was different.
We should have a conversation on coming up with ideas. Like, how do you think? Because recently, well, for the last couple of years, I go on a morning walk and I don't listen to headphones, and that's a good time to think. But since we've been working on this other house, it's an hour away. And I find 50% of the time, I don't turn the radio on. And I don't have music. I don't have podcasts. I don't have books. And I'm just thinking.
I drive in silence a lot.
It's such a, this is new to me. Before I couldn't drive in silence because it was just too boring. But these days, I come up with so many ideas. Maybe that are not all good, but at least it feels like I'm doing something. I'm being productive in my head.
I say it all the time. I did a TEDx talk years ago, TEDx for high school. I say it's important to try and get your subconscious to do all the work for you, or to do a lot of the work, do the heavy lifting. And that is plant all the seeds. Say, this is a problem. I don't want to put, for instance, like, I didn't want to put shelves up in this vintage looking barn that are metal brackets. So I wanted something, and then came to me. You just got to keep planting all these seeds. And as we go, for instance, another example is I'm working on this tow truck restoration, and the whole back part, I must have talked about it before, but my patrons know, the whole back part of the tow truck is all jammed up with all these pins, which I've gotten out now. They're all out. And how can I get a stuck pin out? And my brain, for the last full week, every day I'm coming up with levers and this and that. And what do I have? How can I use what I have to get out what I need? How can I multiply force with what I have? And I actually came up with a really good idea. It's difficult to explain. It's that reel that people don't really understand what I'm doing. I put this 3x3-inch block, and I put the pivots, the fulcrum, and the actual pressure pin, like literally a quarter of an inch apart as far as the fulcrum goes. And then I put a hydraulic ram 10 inches away to do like a seesaw. Hard to explain, not worth it. But the point I'm making is I set all these problems to solve in my subconscious. And in the background, it's working. I've done it my whole life, even with the toy business, how to solve these little problems. And in the background, my brain seems to work on it. And then when I'm driving in silence, it comes to the forefront. Or when I have a moment of clarity, it says, hey, remember the thing that problem you started solving? Well, here's a potential solution. And so I really do juggle a lot of stuff at the same time, consciously and unconsciously.
So
I think we all do it. It's just a matter of focusing and knowing it. Everybody does it. If you have a brain, it works. If you don't have a brain,
a while ago, I was doing all this research, and I was actually reading real research papers on creativity. I just kind of wanted to understand it. And I thought maybe someday when I get old, maybe I can write a book on this. Maybe if I can get really good at being creative, I can write a book on this. And so I just started reading these research papers, and there's a common theme among all of them. And that is, after you gather, you have your problem. And then after you gather your information for the problem, there's always a break before the breakthrough. There's always like it could be as short as a few hours, but it's usually like a day or a couple of days later.
Incubation period.
Yeah. And then the breakthrough comes when you're not expecting it, because you gave your brain the task and it completed it for you when you were doing other things. And
the breakthrough is the thing. Usually you get two big breakthroughs, sometimes more, but usually two big breakthroughs on any big invention that you have, whether it's a small invention or a big invention, but big to you because it's what you're working on, Brett, mentally.
That's interesting. Do you guys ever have dreams about the work that you're doing, like that's specific to what you happen to be thinking about or working on?
Yeah, all the time.
Really?
I don't.
I have...
Mine are not really, I can tell that they're related to what I'm working on based on how it's going, but it's not the same project, right? But I can tell a lot of times when I'm frustrated with something, when something is not going fast enough or I'm not making the progress that I want, I'll have these dreams where I have like a repeated problem. I don't know what the problem is. I can't even think of a good example. But in the dream, it's like I just keep having to deal with this same, I already did this, but now I got to figure it out again. And now I got to figure it out again. And I wake up like really poorly rested because it feels like I was just like on a treadmill the whole time. And then I've had, in the last couple of years, I've had a couple of dreams when something was finished. I think with the building specifically, I would get a big, like when I got the roof on, I remember having like some sort of a dream a couple of days later that was very like, I conquered the dragon kind of, you know, I don't know what the thing was in my brain, but I woke up feeling like, yeah, like I did that thing. It's done. I finished that thing in my dream. And so I think those feelings carry over with me more than the actual like specifics and the mechanics and the real problem solved. But Jimmy, I get the feeling you probably like have dreams that solve the problems and you wake up going, oh yeah, that's the thing that
I definitely have. And I've had dreams that are so bizarre. As a matter of fact, this morning I woke up just as the alarm went off and I dreamed that both of my hands were eel forks, like triad, like the triton. You know what I'm talking
eel
about?
Eel forks. Tridents?
Like a, what do you call it? An eel? Because when we were kids, I had an eel spear. I don't know why. My dad used to hunt eels in Rockaway Beach. An eel spear leaning in the garage, which it looks like Neptune carries a thing with like prongs
like
on
it. Like a trident. But it has like the barb on it, like a point with the barb.
So I woke up this morning as I reached to shut the alarm off on my night table. I dreamed that as I opened my eyes, my hands were both those tridents, like for eel stabbers. But it was the weirdest childhood memory of the eel stabber thing leaning in the garage. It was that exact shape. And so when I saw my hands with these eel things, I immediately like, oh, that's the one Dad had. It's like everything happened like really quickly. And then
How do I turn that into a title? Like, I don't even know what to use. Eel forks?
Eel fork hands.
Got it.
Yeah, there you go.
And then I think to myself, what is the message my brain is trying to send me? There's never a hidden message. It means nothing. But what is the message I should be receiving?
I don't know.
I can't help you on that one.
I have found whatever I'm thinking about before I go to bed is sometimes the first thing I think about when I wake up. And I think this is why people who do gratitude journaling before they go to bed generally wake up in a happy, good mood. And so for me, you know, I'm trying to think of a solution to something with work. Sometimes I just try to think of like, good things that happened today. And it's a trick that just helps me wake up in a better mood and helps me wake up a little faster sometimes. Not always easy, because sometimes you just go to bed frustrated.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think I try to do that when I'm having trouble sleeping or something. I try to, you know, that's usually when I personally will pray and focus on thankfulness, and just it's the same mm-hmm. idea, you know, just try to be mm-hmm. grateful for what I have. And that usually puts my mind at ease a lot more.
The way I go to sleep, I said, it's like watching an airplane run out of gas. It's usually I'm just like doing stuff until like 3 a.m. and then I'm like, let me just lay down for a second. And then I wake up with all my clothes on 4 hours later. It's 8 a.m.
That's funny. Well, any other thoughts on eel?
I have one more thing that came to me in a dream years ago, like 30 mm-hmm. years ago. And yeah. it hasn't been reoccurring unconsciously. It reoccurs consciously all the time. And it's imagine the tip of your pinky had its own little hand on it. So if you have your hand and then the pinky mm-hmm. has its own little five finger hand on it. And I've actually drawn this image and it's been in thing. And then, you know, when I have the fake little rubber hand, it always reminds me of this dream I had 30 something years ago where my pinky has its own little hand on the end of it. And imagine how convenient that would be. You could really pick your nose much easier if you had like a little tiny hand.
Right.
You can really like get it. Like if you go to clean your ear out, those like five little tiny fingers could really clean your ear out. And if you dropped a bolt, like inside of like a, you know, like inside of like a engine, you could reach your little pinky down and the tiny little hand could stretch and grab it, pick it up. So I always think like if there was ever like medical miracles where in 50 years from now, you can go in and just order something strange, have a little tiny hand put on the end of my pinky, but like a little tiny, like the hand from like a little tiny monkey, you know, like a lemur or these like really micro-sized monkeys, have one of their hands surgically attached to the end of your pinky. I'd be up for that. Cool. If anybody wanted to try that. This is Dr. Frankenstein's great-grandson is out there.
I love you even more now.
Yeah,
I promise you my dead pinky.
Okay. That makes a little bit more sense. You're like trying to regain that pinky back.
No. I just want a hand on the end of it. I don't care if it bends anymore.
You want it to be useful, though. It's like a different way for it to be useful again.
Imagine the gloves I'd have to make. It'd be tough.
Imagine getting those gloves on.
Be like, the mini hand does all the work.
Yeah, but it would have to get his tiny fingers down in tiny little glove holes inside of another finger hole.
That's his problem.
It would be like having a cat under the sheets. Like the tip of the glove would be like all moving.
All right. Anyway, thank you to our Patreon supporters for allowing us to talk about stuff like this.
Have a topic. We were worried about not having a topic, and we got through it.
That's true.
Remind me. We talked about having incubate ideas. In the after show, remind me to tell you a stupid Burning Man story when it comes to the hand, the pinky on the hand. The finger on the hand on the pinky.
Yeah, got it. All right. Well, big thanks to everybody at Patreon for supporting the show and for helping us out. We are very grateful. We got a couple new supporters in our list that we shout out this week. So big thanks to A Pretty Big Deal, Inc., Albers Woodworks, Chad from Mancrafting, Chris McCormick, Jim Sammons, welcome Jim, Master of None, Nick Ryan, Odin Leather Goods, Pete Rondo, Rich at Low End Design, Scott at Daddy Yourself DIY, The New Jinky Workshop, Works by Solo, and Tinius Space Industries. Do you guys know Brett Tinius? Have you ever seen his work?
I met him. I'm not sure.
I don't know that you met him. I don't think I've ever met. Well, yeah, maybe. I don't know. He makes space stuff, and it's incredible. So, you know, Jason at Fireball Tools, his like space office thing that he's making, which is incredible. Brett does that, but like with a million more levels of detail, and builds arcade rooms, like arcades, not arcade cabinets. And his basement is a space place, and his workshop is crazy. And I mean, it's crazy. So you should check him out, because the work that they do is really, really cool. And
what's his name again?
Brett Tinius, T-I-N-I-U-S. I'll put his link down there. But he's supporting us on Patreon now. So thanks. He's one of our supporters. I like to make stuff. Been around for a long time. Good stuff. Thank you to everybody over there that supports us, that makes the show happen. We're very grateful. And everybody at every level, no matter how much you support, you get the after show, which you will hear Jimmy talking about Burning Man and pinky fingers. pinky hands.
That's a good name. Yeah,
after show is like, you know, just another podcast of us talking about other stuff that didn't make the show or secret stuff or upcoming or whatever. So if you want to get that, you go to patreon.com/makingit, sign up at any level, and you'll get a link to that show and links to the video. There's a video version on YouTube. So big thanks to everybody that helps us out over there. Do you guys have anything to recommend?
I've been following either of you guys following the Afro Man trial? It's all over the law tube. Everyone knows I'm a big nerd when it comes to law tube, meaning cases, law legal tube. Cases on YouTube. And Afro Man, the guy who's saying, because I got high, I didn't do this because I got high, is great. He's still out there doing stuff. And some fake tipster tipped off the police that he was selling marijuana out of his house in Ohio. So while he was away, the local police broke into his house. They got a scam search warrant, broke into his house, drove through his front gates with like one of those big military trucks, and then kicked his door in, and then ate cake in his house and did all these things. And it was all on his own personal surveillance system. So he used all that, and they didn't find anything, and they took $5,000 from him and only return like $4,500 or $4,600. So he's mad about the missing $400, and he's mad that they broke into his house on a bogus tip that meant nothing to anybody. And so he used the footage from his surveillance cameras to make a video mocking this local police department. And so all those guys on the police department are suing him for defamation.
Oh, I didn't know. I knew about the video that he made. I didn't know about this.
Yeah, no. So this is a case where he's defending himself against the civil suit. Wow. And so they're going deep. And so I haven't gotten too deep into it, but I did see the testimony of one of the cops who's up there crying, that he's basically saying, hey, I have freedom of speech to say anything. You want to break into my house and be on my surveillance cameras, I'm going to use that footage to make a song. He made a song, and that's where they're all claiming that their lives are ruined because of the song he made. And they're up there, and it's just, it's funny. It's like watching a child being like, but he took my sneakers. And they're like, okay, these sneakers are right here. No, but he took them. Your sneakers are right here. That's okay. But like, that's the behavior of at least one of these police officers I saw testifying. It's just very entertaining. And there's hours of footage of the testimony. That's it. Afro Man on trial. It's a civil case. It's not a criminal case. So they're suing him for $20 million because their lives are ruined because of the video clips he put up of them on his surveillance camera going and rummaging through his stuff and eating cake out of his refrigerator.
Crazy.
The cops took a lunch break and ate the food in his own refrigerator.
Man. So I've got two picks. I've got one for everybody, and then I have a pick just for Bob. So my first pick is a YouTube channel called Corbin Dunn, and it's basically like a CNC channel. And he made a plugin for Fusion to do V-carve inlays. So I have been trying to eliminate the Windows PCs in my life, just for personal reasons, just because I don't understand Windows. And so I've been trying to get away from VCarve and do everything in Fusion, including toolpaths and everything. And I came across, and I was like, how do I do VCarves? Because in VCarve, the application, it's fairly easy. And, but in Fusion, it's a lot more difficult, but he made a plugin that makes it easier than VCarve the application. So I'm picking Corbin Dunn, and his Fusion plugin is free. So, I have to imagine that's a lot of work making those things. So that's really cool.
Yeah.
And then my pick for you, Bob, is, Peter McKinnon's last video, Why I Parted Ways with My Editor. And it's basically just a podcast, so you can just listen to it, but he's talking to his old editor and how they used to work together, and how his editor went on to do his own thing. But now they kind of working together again under freelance, and they're still great friends. It's just kind of like a great, like, I used to work with this guy. Now he's off doing his own thing. We have a great relationship. It was cool. It was collaborative. It was creative. And we're friends. I don't know. It just kind of made me think of you and your team.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's similar. Like, Anthony is doing freelance, but he does freelance for me. He edits most of our videos now. Awesome. That's cool. So mine, I have two. One is the Tinius Space Industries. I'll just put the link to their site because you can see their work. It's amazing. The other thing is the newest Bobby Duke video. And I know every time Bobby puts a video out, it's my pick, but I love Bobby as a person and as a creator and as an artist. Like, I love him. And I don't know if you've seen his newest one. It's making a copper rose. It just, like, I know you guys, and I know a lot of people that do kind of what we do, and we don't have expertise in stuff, and we go out and we try something and we figure it out, and then we go on to the next thing. We're just constantly like putting our toes into new things. But watching somebody like Bobby, who's incredibly artistic and crazy, I mean that with love, in a good, crazy way. He's crazy.
He's like a savant when it comes to making things. He's crazy.
And then when he goes and he does a new thing, he doesn't do it in like a utilitarian, I'm learning the steps kind of way. He goes all the way in and like, I don't know how to do this, so I'm going to make the hardest thing possible with this process. And just watching him like hammer flat sheets of copper into a rose. It looks like a rose.
Yeah.
I saw like clips, all of I saw the depth and the twist the and the off. Bend and the three dimensionality stuff of a rose. I don't know. It's wild.
He's
amazing. Blows my mind. So it's a good video too. He's so much fun. So go check out Bobby Duke. My kids love his videos too. And they are constantly trying to get me to figure out how to have Bobby come here so they can meet him and then we can do a video together. And we've talked about it. It's just, you know, it's another one of those cases where he doesn't need anything I do, you know, like, I don't know how we would do a video together because Bobby doesn't.
Bobby came to visit us. We had after the first Maker Central event, we all bonded over in Europe, and we had a group of guys came, and Bobby came that one summer. Is it the summer between 2018 and 2019? I forget. Yeah. Summer 18, I guess. I don't know. But Bobby was here with a couple of guys. We had fun. And then we talked a couple times after. He really was so impressed with the Hudson Valley. Him and his wife were considering moving, but they didn't. But he was like, should I buy a house in the Hudson Valley? I was like, yeah, come be my neighbor.
Cool. Well, you guys got anything else for this week?
That's it. That's it. I'm driving to Papa Chad's this weekend. So if anybody is in the Alabama area, and you hear this on Friday, by Friday, where I will be in Alabama at Papa Chad's Sparks and Sawdust event. Look up Papa Chad on Instagram.
That sounds like fire.
Sparks and Sawdust. Details on the event. I think it's open to the public, I think. I'm not sure.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll catch you next time.
Love you guys.